Hey, this is Matt, and I'm building some custom doors in Forest Park, and you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Those custom doors are not going to make themselves. Thank you for all your work, Matt. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. It's great to be here with you today for show number 936. What we do here on this program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Tip of the hat to Bob Ferguson, who is our engineer on duty today in the WGN radio studio. And coming up on the show today, we hear from a member of a wonderful world music group from here in Chicago, and they have a big show coming up soon. Also, if you have ever switched careers or are thinking of switching careers, there's a new locally based podcast just for you called the Transferable Skills Podcast. Even if you're not switching careers, the stories on the podcast are fun to listen to. We hear from the creator and the host of that show, and there is a conference coming to Chicago on Monday that focuses on the future of women and their success in this country. We talked to the president and CEO of the Institute for Women's Policy Research. There's a little bit of drama in Chicago politics this week. You know it's the real deal when the headlines are that the Chicago City Council defies the mayor. The City Council decided to empower Chicago Police Superintendent Larry Snelling, giving him the power to extend the contract with the ShotSpotter gunshot detection system and taking away that power from Mayor Johnson. The vote was 33-14 against the mayor. Relatively speaking, that's a big rebuke in Chicago. The Corporation Council for the city said that this is illegal and that, quote, the legislative branch can't compel the executive branch to act, end quote. Now, I'm not going to get into the weeds of how government operates here, but man, is this exciting. It's not often we get a city council that is willing to stand up to a Chicago mayor. And maybe we all have ourselves to blame a little bit for that because we allow the government to function as it does, with a weak mayor on paper, but a ferociously strong mayor in practice. And sure, government reform isn't the most exciting thing to campaign on when we have other issues like poverty, homelessness, crime, transportation, and quality of life to talk about, but we've seen the results of a weak legislative body. Remember the parking meter deal that Mayor Daley wanted? It passed the city council 40-5. And according to a report from UIC, the city council was more in lockstep with Mayor Emanuel than they were with Mayor Daley. So it's kind of exciting to see the council wake up a bit here. Oh, and the alder people love aldermanic prerogative. That's the tradition of letting the aldermen have the final say on issues like development in their wards because, hey, they know their wards the best, right? Maybe do the same with ShotSpotter then? Some wards in Chicago bear the brunt of crime. Maybe let these wards decide what they need for themselves. In any case, grab the popcorn. This could get intriguing. Emphasis on could get intriguing. I mean, this is still Chicago after all. Throughout our nation's history, it's been the work of those who have fought so hard for equality and inclusion that has really affected change for so many. And that work continues with the Institute for Women's Policy Research. That's a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that engages in research to shape public policy and improve the lives of women from diverse backgrounds. And coming up in just a couple of days, on Monday, this group will host the Power Plus Summit in downtown Chicago. We can check out the website, IWPR.org. And Dr. Jamila Taylor is the president and CEO of the Institute for Women's Policy Research. Dr. Taylor, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you here. So this organization, the Institute for Women's Policy Research, this was started in 1987. Tell us a little bit more about what you do and the mission of this organization.
Absolutely. Well, IWPR is a nonpartisan, nonprofit research organization with a simple mission, and that is to win economic equity for all women and eliminate barriers to their full participation in society. So our research-based team really focuses on building the evidence to shape policies that grow women's power and influence. And that includes closing inequality gaps and improving the economic well-being of families.
And that research, I know, is really important, like you were saying. And it is extensive, the research that your organization has done. You've gone, I was checking this out, state by state, and you've looked at what's happening sort of at the local level. And I think that's really important, because when we have this conversation, I think it's really easy to generalize across the nation. But, you know, what's happening in certain areas might be different than other areas. So when you're looking at your research, how are you conducting this? What are you looking for specifically?
Absolutely. And so our research is really spread across, you know, four sort of key buckets. You know, we look at equitable work and wages. So looking at things like equal pay policies, livable wages, union and labor rights, better job quality and retirement security, especially, you know, for women. We also look at issues like caregiving. And so, you know, unpacking some of the challenges that women and families face when it comes to accessing quality, affordable childcare, ensuring that families have access to paid sick leave and family leave, and the importance of flexible work schedules, particularly when it comes to working women who are trying to not only make ends meet, but just, you know, support their families. We also look at issues around education and career advancement, helping student parents, ensuring training opportunities, workforce development, even looking at issues like student loan debt to ensure that we are making sure that college is more affordable and accessible for women. And then last but not least, reproductive justice and health equity is another important topic area that we focus on. So we are looking at access to abortion care across states in this country, not only unpacking, you know, where abortion is accessible, which states it's accessible, which states it is not, but then also what are the economic impacts of not having access to abortion. You know, one of the key recent research projects that we just released unpacked the fact that the lack of abortion access, restrictions, and bans are actually costing the U.S. economy $68 billion per year.
Wow.
And so, yes. So thinking about how all of these issues are really central to understanding how the economy is, one, working for women, and also how it's not working for women, and then using that research to think through and develop policy solutions for the way forward.
The whole economic issue, I think, is really important. And like you say, it runs pretty much through everything that you're doing. And yes, we're having a conversation, I think, recently because of the political climate about abortion access and reproductive health. But that economic angle, I think, is something that we have to keep in mind, especially because, you know, we ask, well, where does this come from? And it's this sort of socialization that we all have. Well, it's, you know, women are going to take care of the family. Women are supposed to be in charge of the domestic issues. But that has also been sort of counter to economic success. And disproportionately, you mentioned caregivers. I know that we see caregivers and those who are taking care of children, those are disproportionately women. So there really is an economic aspect here. And we have to think about where does this come from? It's really this socialization that we're all exposed to. It's very real, and it has economic, serious economic impacts.
It absolutely does. I think one of the things that, you know, folks need to keep in mind, and this is something that IWPR continues to drive in all of our materials, including our research and even the conversations that we have with policymakers and advocates across the country, is the fact, you know, that women are a key driving force when it comes to this economy. Women make up half of this economy. And so ensuring that they have access to, you know, affordable childcare, for example, that they're able to, you know, sort of really lean into caregiving with the supports that they need is really essential to how the broader economy works for everyone. So I think that needs to be clear. I think also, you know, one of the things that IWPR, you know, does, I think, in such a clear and concise way is draw the connections to issues like care work, like, you know, paid leave, like access to quality, affordable childcare, you know, like access to reproductive rights and justice, pay equity. So whereas, you know, an organization that centers an intersectional, I think, feminist focus on how we do research and we think about the development of policy, we're also really clear about making these connections when it comes to these issues, because we know that women do not lead single issue lives. And so all of these things are central and closely connected to our ability to you know, be healthy and thrive and contribute to the economy in optimal ways.
And I think it's important also to take into account, yes, there's that intersection of the economic success, but also how do we then apply policy to make sure that women are getting what they need? You could take this even deeper when we think about intersectionality, because not all women have the same experience. So what I mean by that is factoring in race and economic status, because what a white woman goes through might be different than a black woman or a person of color, a woman of color. And I think we have to incorporate that. I know that's something that you look at as well. And we don't always do that, you know, when we talk about these issues, we sometimes generalize, like I said before, but I know that you've been looking at this. And so that's part of this conversation too.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, look, I want to be clear that, you know, when we think about some of the central issues that IWPR focuses on, women across the board are experiencing challenges with things like, you know, access to abortion, having access to quality childcare, having access to paid leave. But women are of color are disproportionately impacted by these issues. And so that's another reason why our research is so important as well, because, you know, it is informing how policymakers are thinking through how to develop or implement the right solutions to really target and center the communities that are most heavily impacted by these challenges. And part of that, look, I mean, you know, we know that historically, you know, women of color, people of color in this country tend to face more challenges. And when it comes to accessing essential health care, you know, equitable wages, having access to childcare, being undervalued and underpaid, you know, in the professions and jobs that, you know, we tend to hold as people of color. So all of those things are really central to the conversation for us. And again, whereas we focus on all women, you know, we really do center women of color and in terms of how we do our research and also how we're thinking about the solutions that will, you know, ensure that all women have what they need to thrive.
Well, I know that you're coming to Chicago on Monday.
Yes.
This is awesome. The Power Plus 2024 conference. It's happening downtown Chicago. Briefly, tell us what's happening here.
So the Power Plus Summit is IWPR's flagship convening, and we will be in Chicago on September 23rd and 24th, so coming up on Monday, the first day of the conference. And it is really an opportunity to engage policymakers, thought leaders, and advocates to really corral around our theme of, you know, research to revolution and create a space where we come together and reimagine a future of gender equity. So we're bringing together bold thinkers, community leaders, and advocates to bridge some of those connections really around some of the policy and research areas that we've talked about today. But then also thinking ahead to what impactful change really looks like for women We have an absolutely stellar lineup of speakers, mm-hmm. including Governor J.B. Pritzker, who's going to be in the House. We're also going to have video remarks from Chicago Mayor Johnson. And just a host of dynamic national leaders, as well as local voices, you know, will be brought into the conversation as well. You know, and choosing Chicago, such a dynamic, colorful, wonderful city, it was also really important for us to engage local voices in an intentional way for this conference. And so we're really excited to be there and have such an awesome host committee as well that is engaging us and working with us along the way for this.
I agree. I think Chicago is a great place, especially for this conversation, because there are lots of people working on these issues of success for women and equality, and the work continues. And I know that we can all check out IWPR.org. That's the website for the Institute for Women's Policy Research. That's a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that engages in research to really shape public policy and improve the lives of women from diverse backgrounds. And Dr. Jamila Taylor is the president and CEO of that organization. Dr. Taylor, thank you so much for talking to us today. Welcome to Chicago a little bit early. It's a great place. You're going to love it. And I know the conference will be a success, the Power Plus 2024 Summit. Thank you so much for all of your work and for talking to us today.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me, Mike.
Switching careers isn't an easy thing to do. Sure, we should all follow our passions and our dreams, but it's possible when the rubber needs to meet the road, it doesn't always go smoothly. So sometimes it's helpful to hear how other people have changed careers and what skills they took from one profession to the next. And sometimes it's just really interesting to hear these stories. Well, there's a new podcast that features these stories. It's called the Transferable Skills Podcast, and its creator and host is Noah Mishkin. He is here with us today on Outside the Loop. Noah, welcome to the program, man.
Mike, thanks for having me here today.
You got it. So I think this is a really cool idea for a podcast. And what you're doing here with this show is you are talking to people who have made a pivot in their professional life. And I want you at the outset here just to tell us how you decided to create this podcast, because I know your own personal story plays a role.
Yeah, it sort of was one of those things that I found myself saying the same story over and over for many years, and then starting to get curious about how my story might be similar to others' experiences for themselves as well. So my background was that I had studied and practiced architecture for a while, and then got out of that to do something completely different altogether, like literally nothing within architecture, but got into business, more traditional business. Mm-hmm. And the question that I was always asked at any point in the 15 years that followed was, do you regret going to school for so long, practicing for a couple of years, and then abandoning that background to do something different? And after a while, I realized that I had transitioned from architecture into business fairly well, partially because of the skills that I had picked up, especially in school, but as a practicing architect, and the skills were very transferable. And I had so many that I felt really attributed to that robust education that carried over very nicely into my new career. So I had started to think about how other people have also made massive pivots in their career to new jobs, completely different from their backgrounds, and the skills that they leverage, as opposed to the misnomer of abandon.
Right. And I think that you focusing on transferable skills is really interesting, because when you listen to your podcast and you have your guests come on, they're basically telling their story, which I think is really cool, because there's a little bit of inspiration there. You know, like I am a person, we'll get to this in a few minutes, but I'm on your show coming up here, but I've switched careers. Now I'm a teacher. I still do radio. I started in radio and audio, and now I'm kind of, you know, in both of these worlds, which I really love, and I'm very thankful for being able to do that. But, you know, that was, it was a frustrating, scary kind of thing. And so when people make that pivot, that is really scary for some people. I speak from experience. So to hear that, hey, this is doable, here's my story, it makes you feel like, oh yeah, you know what? I could do this. I could really go after my dream. But that inspiration, when I listen to your show, at least for me, that's really what comes through. In addition to the skills part, because I think it's cool that you focus on the skills. So together, what happens here is it's a really nice story that you have every episode, which I think is a really cool part of your show.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying so. And you know, having you on my show was a tremendous source of inspiration for myself too. I mean, I'm really, as you can tell, I'm really into media. I love radio. I think it might be America's or the world's pastime because that's where everything comes from. Before we had visual media like TV, everyone gathered around the radio.
Right.
And to some degree, we're still doing that when we're in the car, when we're going places on road trips with our families, our friends. The radio is a key component to our history, our memories, and the experiences that we share together. So I'm a big fan of what you do too. And having you on was a source of inspiration for me. I appreciate you saying also about the skills, because I think there's many people that look at careers as jobs or industries, as opposed to the skills that one utilizes to succeed in those roles. And the skills are a lot more transferable than I think we give credit to them. And so we look at background, like how many years of experience do you have to qualify for a potential job that you're seeking? Or, you know, does your background align traditionally with what we're looking for to fill this role? But rather, are you somebody that possesses the skills that can transfer over into many other sort of industry agnostic roles, because it's about the individual's ability to leverage those skills to be successful in any given role and to adapt to a new environment. So that's how I view it. And I think that I'm hoping that this is inspirational for the audience, because I can tell you that it's certainly from a selfish perspective, it's inspirational to me. I love hearing these stories. I love getting to know people.
Sure.
And it's just, I'm having such a fun time doing it and meeting such great people such as yourself. I mean, anytime I'm introduced to somebody as a potential guest, I've never been disappointed about hearing their journey and looking at skills in a whole new way than maybe I had prior to that interview. I'm getting a wealth of knowledge and education here just talking to people and seeing how they apply their skills. And back to one of your earlier points, I think that the podcast is supposed to be inspirational, and at the very least, maybe most, depending on who you are, maybe, or what it is that you need in life, mm-hmm. it might just serve as the permission that you need to give yourself. Because at some point, if anyone makes a career transition, it's rare that it's seamless, easy, and without some maybe daunting stress, anxiety of whether you can do that. You might follow your passion and do something that you've always wanted to pursue. And sometimes all you need is that permission. So listening to this, you hear the experiences that others have gone through. You've seen how they've braved these big changes and pivots in their career. And maybe all you needed is to hear that others can do it. And so too, you can as well.
Amen to all that. I mean, the episode that's currently out, mine's coming out in a couple of days, like I said, but you have someone who has gone into pastry and the experience there of hearing like how this person got out of what she was doing prior and now is just rocking the pastry world. I mean, like right there, inspiration. Sometimes we need, as you say, that permission, and it's okay to do that. Like, it's okay to change things up. You don't have to be locked in for something for the rest of your professional life. And I think you're right. We don't often think about the skills that we've learned and like who we are as people, the amazing things we can do. You can apply that to other jobs. I think that's what you're exploring here.
Absolutely. And the audience is, it could be anyone, but I think the majority of the people that are listening and the future audience that is yet to discover it, because we are early on, are going to be those that are somewhere in the midst of their career looking for that inspiration, as well as even maybe hiring managers and recruiters, people that are now going to be inspired and look at how they're going to fill those roles or the types of candidates that they're looking and vetting for potential roles that maybe they hadn't looked at in that exact way.
And we should mention, we can get the Transferable Skills podcast wherever we get podcasts these days. So you're on all the major platforms, so we can just search for Transferable Skills podcast. You're about, six, seven episodes deep into this run now. What's standing out to you? Because here you are kind of pivoting, doing this podcast, learning from other people who have also pivoted. What have you learned? What stands out to you so far?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mike. So you'll be episode number six, which is coming up, like you said, in just a couple of days. I've got 11 of them completed. So I've got a little bit of runway. And during that time, I can tell you that episode 10 and 11, I went into those interviews with a completely different mindset than I did in episodes 1 through 2, 3, 4, 5. It's because I myself on a journey through this, and I'm learning a lot, including, I think that people have, I'm going to give you a couple learnings and discoveries that I've had for myself. Mm-hmm. The first is, most of the time people make a big pivot in the middle of their career because they realize what it is that they want. It's that they finally give themselves the permission to follow their heart, to follow their interests and curiosities, as opposed to maybe putting too much pressure on yourself earlier in your career and saying, this is what's expected of me from others. And the majority of the people that I have spoken to already, they did that. They've left lucrative careers. They've left the comfort of what they know. They've left the industries that they studied and practiced for many years to go follow their heart, to do things that are completely different, like massive career pivots.
Yeah.
And that's usually going to end up being a lot more fulfilling if you had an interest in this. And then once you applied that interest in practice, it actually was what you were hoping for, because the majority of these people are doing very well, feeling very fulfilled, finally living their own truths.
Yeah. And I think, again, that comes through on this show, where you are talking to these folks who have made a career change. You're learning about the skills that they have acquired and now are using for something that they really love to do. I think this is an inspirational show. It's called the Transferable Skills Podcast, available wherever we get our podcasts. And yeah, I'm on the show coming up in a couple of days here. It will be released. I was really flattered that you had me on. It was a lot of fun. So I appreciate that. And hopefully, you know, my little slice of life can inspire some folks out there. We'll see how it goes. But you're doing a great job here, Noah. And again, we should all get this podcast, Transferable Skills Podcast. Noah Mishkin is the creator and the host of that show. Get this podcast, download it. Hey, man, really appreciate the time. Keep doing what you're doing. I'm excited to see what happens down the road for you.
Thank you, Mike. I really appreciate you having me here today. And just again, thank you for being on the show. You were a tremendous guest, and now you're a tremendous host.
Talk about local music from the Sarabi Ensemble, a fantastic world music group based here in Chicago. And Carlo Basile is the guitarist in the Sarabi Ensemble. The website is sarabiensemble.org. Carlo, welcome back to Outside the Loop. It's been a little while.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me back. Glad to be here to talk about the group and what we're up to.
This is really, really cool what you've got going on here. You were on this very show last year talking about your music, and I know that you have a big gig coming up soon at Navy Pier on September 29th. We'll get to that, but just remind us about your music and your band and what you do, because you're playing world music. I think it sounds really great, but when we say world music, what exactly are we talking about here?
Well, you know... There are books written. There's one by David Byrne written about this called "Don't Call It World Music." Or, you know, people talk about global sounds. You hear the word fusion a lot, which we try to avoid as well, because, you know, the thing is you have people from different cultures coming together in our group playing music. But now we've been doing it for over 10 years, and so the amalgam changes and the equation changes over time. You know, sometimes you see these great musicians from around the globe who get together And, you know, Yo-Yo Ma has a group that's amazing and it's well rehearsed and it's well thought out. But other times, you know, people kind of get up there and just jam.
Right.
Sort of groovy, in a groovy sort of way, which is cool. And you get these sounds and you get different timbres and, you know, different cultures represented. And I think that's great. But, you know, I think we try to take it a step further with this group because now we've had time to kind of talk about the different scales of music from Indian music or from Arabic music or from flamenco music from Spain. And, you know, the brew that's been kind of brewing now for 10 years is getting better and it tastes better now because I think we have a better idea of each other's cultures. And then we, you know, we're all from Chicago. So, which is an amazing place to be from, no matter what anybody on the globe says.
That's right.
Still think this is the best place because we have this richness here and we're around each other a lot. And so we're able to create something like this. In other places that are a little bit more homogenous, let's say, it's harder to find this kind of mix living together. And so we've had the opportunity to work together in, like I say, the Indian culture, Arabic culture, Spanish flamenco. My background is Spanish guitar, so it means Spanish classical and flamenco and some Latin rhythms and, you know, stuff from Cuba. But then there's also this African element and, you know, to kind of tie into that, we have a new artist joining us at Navy Pier coming up from Guinea, who's just moved here in the last year. He's an amazing kora player, a young guy. Abdoulaye Konde is his name, or Konde, probably the way he pronounced it. He's just a great player of the African harp. It's a 21 string instrument called the kora. And, you know, he'll be just one of the things we feature on that set, but it's certainly worth seeing. And, that's the kind of thing we do is we played with other musicians from West Africa. And in fact, we have one joining us on the India tour coming up too. We can talk more about that as well. So getting back to it, I'm giving you a long winded answer, but the point is we have thought about how to put these elements together in a way that make it more than just, I would say, world music or global fusion or whatever those things are. I would say that it's, you know, just a well thought out cultural blend, you know, something like that.
I think it's interesting to think of Chicago, like you were saying, in the sense that we're pretty lucky to be here because people are from all over the globe and they come to Chicago because this is such a great place. And so in terms of world music, when you look at, you know, across the United States, I mean, is Chicago kind of a destination in terms of like, okay, if you want really good world music, there's a good scene here, it can thrive here. Is Chicago known for that?
I mean, I think so. I've done well over the last 25 years playing my guitar, making a living playing Spanish guitar in different settings. And, but you know, I kind of keep my antenna up and I'm also open-minded. And so you have to be curious. That's like number one for anything, I think. And certainly for this, you have to actually care about what other people are doing. And if you don't, then you stick in your little bubble and you do whatever you do. And that can work for some people. But yeah, I think Chicago has the, all of the things that maybe New York and even LA might have, but not as competitive and hectic as either coast, you know what I mean? So there's a little bit more chill going on in Chicago, a tiny bit smaller, but maybe bigger populations of certain ethnic groups. Right. So, the mix is different, you know, than let's say on either coast for this kind of, global sound or whatever you were calling it. But the point is I think definitely Chicago would be one of the places that, would be considered to be like, you know, the center of that sort of thing.
And the vision of your band, you say that you are really looking to unite the world through music. And I know that you have traveled the world. You've played all over the place. So that vision that you have with your group, Sarabi Ensemble, how have you been working towards that unity? Because, man, I'll tell you, we could probably use some of that unity right about now, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I hear you, especially in this country right now, so divided. And one of the things we bring, you know, wherever we go, whether it's within small communities here, you know, that maybe haven't seen this kind of music, and or whether we're going overseas and playing internationally, is the idea, hey, that no matter what you see on the television, the United States, Chicago, it's a lot more than what you're hearing sometimes, right? And yeah. So we want to get that point across. And then, you know, from our own perspective, Saraswati, who is the leader, you know, the founder of the group with myself, she has a hashtag live as one family. And, you know, she tries to be super, we all do kind of be apolitical when we're up on stage, but at the same time, if you see what's going on up there, we don't really have to say that much. We just have to show it. So, I mean, I think that's part of it. The other thing that we bring across is like our work in social service settings. I curate a program for music in the University of Chicago Hospital. And that's been cornerstone of what I do, is working in different settings that you don't always see or hear music in, but on a daily basis, people will come up to me sobbing and saying, you know, this has taken me away from my worries. And, you know, I'm going to have chemotherapy here, but I didn't think about it for 5 minutes because I was listening to you.
Wow.
And, you know, so that kind of thing is important to me. I have a social work background even before I was a musician. So for me, it's like they kind of go hand in hand. And yeah, I'd still be playing my guitar than sitting behind a desk filling out paperwork. So, you know, I just had to figure out ways to get it out there. And so Sarabi is one of those vehicles that has helped me to kind of reach out to other people and to other cultures.
Talk about the really the very cool show that you have coming up on September 29th. That is a Sunday. It's happening at Navy Pier, and this is part of the Chicago World Music Festival. You and the Sarabi Ensemble are performing at 5 p.m. that day. Tell us about this gig. This is great.
Yeah, we kind of got a little bit late notice from the cultural department, but we're glad to be a part of it. And when I looked at the schedule, I was like, wow, this is cool. So they have bands playing from, you know, around the globe. There'll be bands playing from 2 to 8 p.m. around Navy Pier. And you know how Navy Pier is on a Sunday. Probably best not to drive down there if you don't have to.
Right.
We'll be at the Beer Garden stage, which is near the end of the pier. So you got to walk a ways. But hey, it's, you know, I think by that time the weather will cool off a little bit, so hopefully it won't be like, you know, 90 degrees or something. But I always enjoy playing on Navy Pier because, you know, I go way back to Chicago Fest on Navy Pier.
For sure.
And Muddy Waters playing, yeah, on that pier, you know. And so for me, like, anytime I can play there in any setting, I'm happy to do it. And so we'll also have three different dancers, Kina Ribora, Lorena, who I mentioned, and Leticia Aravena. We'll have our friend Abdullah Konde, who I just mentioned, Fran Banish on guitar, and two great percussionists, Bob Garrett, who played in Hamilton and played with Sting when his show was here, and then Dhananjay Kunte, who's an amazing tabla player from Pune, India. So I think we'll have a really cool mix. We'll play some fun stuff, some tunes that people might recognize, and then, of course, the Sarabi blend that we do.
Lots going on with the Sarabi Ensemble. We can help them out. Going to India in December, sarabiensemble.org. We will link up to that website. Also, we can help them out by going to see them live here in Chicago. That's pretty easy. Sunday, September 29th at Navy Pier. That's part of the Chicago World Music Festival. That's a 5 p.m. show. That'll be a beautiful evening of music. Carlo Basile is a guitarist in Sarabi Ensemble. Hey, Carlo, congrats on all that you've accomplished. You sound great. This is going to be a great show coming up on September 29th at Navy Pier. And best of luck into the new year, as you will be in India. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much again for having me, Mike.
And that just about does it. Outside the Loop show number 936 is done. Thank you so much for listening to the show this week. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for all of his engineering help in the WGN Radio studio. I hope you have a wonderful week. I will talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.